the one that's no telling what we'll do when we're free. When I'm gone, there's no telling what we'll do when we're free. It's the one that you may as well crash with. That's a rather rough way to come out of a song, but I haven't anybody around me except me and a mouse. My partner got back late from a meeting, so we started late, and I'm more than a little discombobulated. So I may stand up and turn around a few times, see if I can find my place. I apologize for turning away and looking at this computer, but it keeps blinking at me. That's what my father says. And that gives a little bit away about me. Anyway, that was the Folk Implosion, and the song was, it was kind of a one-hit wonder for them. And very strange, a very strange song. I'm sorry, I'm getting other things in my headphones here. Hang on. Let me see if I can get my partner in. I'm ringing him. At any rate, Lou Barlow is somebody I've always liked quite a bit. He was in a band called Sebado, and they put out one of my favorite albums called The Freed Weed. And it's not for everyone. It's very rough. It's like folk music done. It's very difficult to say. In an attic filled with old pillows and things. It's not a traditional folk album. He did it by himself, and it's all strange instrumentation and strange tunings, but brilliant, I think, and very unique. There's a lot of other things that sound like it now, but anyway, one of the things that I'm pleased about doing, at least with this show, is bringing some music, and hopefully more and more legal music, and less not legal music, into this, whatever this is, this old number business. And so I wrote to Lou, and he's allowed us to use anything he discards, kind of his musical scraps. He publishes a website, and he puts a lot of his musical scraps on it for free download. And let's play a little bit of one of those, and I'll see if I can get myself back. This song's called Pearl, and it came out on an album a few years ago on the Folk Implosion name. But this is a rough cut.
Pearl, listen to me now. I'm about to bring it down. There are things I need to tell you that can't wait. I've been doubting in my sleep. There are secrets I keep. Maybe in the end I'll find a way to stay. Oh, but Pearl, it don't feel that way today. Well, it wasn't long ago. I was down upon my knees, begging you to change your mind again. yourself above me. You tried to leave, but Pearl, I don't let go. That is until tonight. Now
someone's having a lot of problems.
There's a world outside of...
We're gonna have to call it quits on that one. I think number six was went pretty well, but old number seven is looking a little bit like the glorious train wreck. Okay. All right. So it's just going to be me for this one, and I'm sorry for the very, very bad start. And occasionally in this show, there'll be long silences where the host sits and gathers himself back, as though he's fallen off a cliff or fallen off a building and injured himself, and is trying to figure out whether he can actually get back up and continue breathing and living. So right now I'm laying on the ground, so to speak, checking my different functions, my body, seeing if things move, wiggling my toes. I think I'm all right. I think I can make it. At any rate, I got a few submissions, some songs, some bits, from ronfez.net people. Mr. Mooch Cassidy went over some of my earlier recordings and took out all the parts where I complained about things and then put it together in over a musical track, a very, very happy musical track, but then it's me complaining. So let's listen to Mr. Mooch Cassidy as I continue to try to rise up from the place that I've fallen. Yes. Hello, my friends. I'm bored. Boring. Although I'm sure it's quite exciting, I don't think this works. Now, here's a cartoon. This might be funny. It's there. Ah, forget it. Oh my goodness, I'm bored. And there's the Lord of the Rings. I know everyone loved it, I didn't. Thought it was alright. Could this be duller? Picture of a snowman with a carrot nose, and I have to say I don't care for it. I don't like looking at snowmen. They're disturbing. Oh my goodness, I'm bored. Not interesting. It's not funny. Okay, let's move on to Martha Stewart.
Martha's new kitchen. We'll have a first look at that. Oh, Martha, why? She must be so busy. So busy. Tiring. It makes me tired. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to read it either. That was a little thing that Mr. Mooch Cassidy put together. And apparently I'm frequently bored. I didn't know how bored I was. And actually, I got a little bored listening to that. But not because of him. Just myself. I thought expressing boredom might prove interesting. Oh, this is boring. Oh, that's boring. But as it turns out, it's boring. And now I could be triple bored right now. At any rate, I did have some things I wanted to talk about. One of which was an older film I saw. I saw another old film. This one was called Sitting Pretty. It starred Robert Young, Maureen O'Hara. And it was very nice. It was sort of a precursor to the Father Knows Best type of show. And Robert Young played a dashing young attorney, and Maureen O'Hara played his dutiful wife. She always wore the frilly smock thing, as though she was right in the middle of doing the dishes and every other chore in the house. And they had three children, and the children were not well behaved at all, and they kept losing their servants. And, well, they put an ad in the paper to find someone, and they got a reply from a Lynn Belvedere, and so they agreed to have this Lynn Belvedere come and live with them. And of course, Lynn Belvedere turns out not to be a woman, but turns out to be a man, and a very strange man. And one of the odd things about the film, it's a very pleasant film, but Mr. Belvedere is a rather difficult figure. He's not a very pleasant figure, and he's not someone that we would take too well in a film today. And let me just play a little bit of some of the things that he says, some of the things that he did. This is a little piece from... He meets a neighbor, Mr. Appleton, who is a little... He's a stay-home older gentleman. I don't know what they called him back in the old days, but he was one of those men who didn't marry and just stayed home and took care of his mother and went out in the garden and sort of potted around. And when he spoke to people, he was always inquiring about their whatever he could to get the gossip. So here's Mr. Belvedere meeting with Mr. Appleton on the sidewalk, and you'll be able to detect Mr. Belvedere's absolute dislike of Mr. Appleton, and you'll see what the sort of strangeness and how this wouldn't quite work in today's movie.
Good morning, Belvedere.
You will kindly address me as Mr. Belvedere until I grant you permission to drop the title. A contingency which seems hardly likely, Mr. Appleton.
Oh, well, really, I intended no offence. Tell me, Mr. Belvedere, are you completely happy with the Harry Kings?
Only an idiot is completely happy anywhere.
I understand those dear little boys are devoted to you, and that Mrs. King considers you quite a treasure.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. And she should. As my mother is always saying, good servants are worth their weight in gold.
The next time your parent makes that original observation, tell her it's one of the older clichés.
Yes, I will. Incidentally, my mother is very anxious to make your acquaintance properly. Perhaps you could drop in for a visit on your next afternoon off.
I am not a servant, Mr. Appleton. My afternoons are always my own.
Well, in that case, drop in any time for a glass of sherry.
I dislike sherry as much as I deplore the habit of dropping in on people uninvited.
But, Mr. Belvedere, I am inviting you.
And I, sir, am declining. Good day.
Good day to you. One of the interesting things about the early days, too, the pre-50s, I don't know when this habit stopped. Maybe it hasn't stopped. Maybe it continues in some way. Is there some kind of an Englishness to our olden characters, our preceding fellows? I don't know where they get these voices. I mean, I've got my voice from a natural type of life. But these fellows, they seem like they were born in England, or there's some way of acquiring an English or aristocratic accent. And, I don't know, I just wondered. I was wondering, where did that come from? When did that start? I mean, was there a Britishness in this country that just persisted for all these years and sort of died out in the last 30 years? I don't know. I wonder. Anyway, Mr. Belvedere, he was unpleasant the entire film to everyone who came in contact with him, but he was very smart, and that intelligence seemed to render everyone just weak. They couldn't respond to him, and it sort of created this atmosphere that if you're intelligent, you can be as cruel as you like, and that cruelty was then justified. And I think that sort of mentality did belong to those old days. I mean, that's the sort of thing that led... I mean, again, I bring up Hitler again. I brought him up last time, because the other film I saw had some Hitler in it. But that sort of mentality that intelligence must be respected, no matter its message, I think is not something that we really condone nowadays. But back then they did. Mr. Belvedere is a cruel fellow, but he's quite intelligent, and the other characters in the film have the utmost respect for him for that reason. He's held in very high regard, but he's an abomination. Let's play some more Mr. Belvedere being mean. This is a very brief one.
Now, who could that be?
If you go to the door, you need not conjecture.
So the door rings, and Maureen O'Hara wonders, oh, well, who could that be? I'm repeating the story here, of course. And then Mr. Belvedere does what he does every single time. He puts people in their place. They're not allowed to have any kind of normal human reality. I'm not sure exactly how he wants everyone to react or behave. I sort of imagine that... there is no way in which he would not react in the way he does, that he would persist in being critical, no matter the reaction. So if she went to the door and got it, he might challenge her later for some other reason. And that's an also, that I think that's a very familiar, a familiar way to be. Here's another little bit with Mr. Appleton.
Someone going away?
Well, how would I know? They want a cab, that's all. You know where it is?
I do. You continue on and turn left into the first street, and this is the fourth house on the right.
Thanks, buddy.
You are entirely welcome.
Hey, you mind telling me what you're doing with that feather?
I am cross-pollinating a specimen of the family Iridacea.
Come again?
I am trying to develop a new strain of iris. I breed them.
No kidding. You mean like some guys breed Cocker Spaniels?
The principle, believe it or not, is identical.
Clarence!
Yes, Mother?
What did that taxi man want?
He's looking for 21 Carver's Lane, Mother.
What on earth do the Harry Kings need a cab for?
I don't know, Mother.
Well, why didn't you ask him?
I did, but he doesn't know either, Mother.
Oh, you never find out anything.
Poor Mr. Appleton. He never finds out anything, and he tries so hard to please his mother with all the local gossip. He's always bursting into people's doors and asking strange questions. I saw a light on. What's going on up there? And also he can report back to his mother and get her love. And she never gives it, and she's awful. Just a harridan in a wheelchair, being rolled around her house by a servant with those little monocles looking out the window, and then ordering her little flowery son, who's really quite old. He's almost in his 50s. And he's not a homosexual exactly, because he doesn't seem to have any type of sexuality. He's just sort of a lady man. And, I don't know, it seemed to me after watching the film, or while watching it, that both Mr. Belvedere and this Mr. Appleton character they weren't necessarily the archetypes that later figures were based on, but they did seem to be. There was something about them that seemed like, oh, this is the first one of these fellows in movies. And then after that, subsequently, they would get recreated and stereotyped. So the origin of the stereotype, perhaps, the cruel fellow that comes to stay and puts things in order. And then, you know, over the years it got softened and corrected in some ways, so that there was a hint of heart behind the Mr. Belvedere character. But the Mr. Belvedere character in Sitting Pretty is a heartless man. He doesn't like children, he doesn't like people, and in fact, he's just using the home as a place to write his novel, which is a big hit when it comes out, but is a cruel satire of the experience that he's having on Hummingbird Hill, which is the location of all this. And there are some other ones, just some short ones. If I ever have a soundboard, I'm going to put a couple of these in, because I like them. Where's my person that I tell to do this? Press this button. Oh, yes, this is, he's led up to his room. Maureen O'Hara leads him up to the room, his bedroom where he's going to stay. And they're not exactly sure who he is and what's going on with him. He's very critical of everything, and she finally asks him what it is that he does. And I liked his answer, even though it's awful.
Tried to fix it up as nicely as we could. I hope you like it.
After the obvious eliminations have been made, I believe it will be entirely satisfactory. For my work, I require an atmosphere of Spartan simplicity.
And may I ask what your profession is?
Certainly. I am a genius.
That's a terrific response, I think. I mean, not in a good way, but it really sets the tone for the film. At that point, you realize this is very strange, that this film is going to have a character who goes off in this way. Usually characters go off in a clowny kind of way, but Mr. Belvedere goes off in an almost sinister intellectual way. Oh, and you know, I'm a genius. Yes, and there's some other things he does and says that I liked a lot. I would recommend that. That was a very enjoyable and strange film. And for whatever reason, I'm seeing a lot of Robert Young pictures. And he's not someone I've experienced much of, except for that low-rent television show and the Sanka ads. Those two things I'm a little too familiar with. One of the other things I wanted to bring up, I talk about, you know, over the course of the week, it was just thoughts that came to mind, interesting to me, ideas. And I came across The Courtship of Eddie's Father, that was playing on television. And I remember that from a long time ago, with Bill Bixby, and that had the very nice Harry Nilsson theme, bizarre Harry Nilsson with his, I think Harry Nilsson and Donovan, just, you could put them together and just move them off into their own apartment and they can make their little lullaby music. But anyway, one of the odd things about The Courtship of Eddie's Father
which was sort of like the Brady Bunch, without the family, really. It was sort of like Mr. Brady and if Mr. Brady and Bobby Brady just were living together in an apartment and everyone else was dead. And it, you know, and then Bobby was trying to get his father hooked up with some new woman. That was basically the courtship of Eddie's father. And they also had a servant. I can't remember her name. I think she was Chinese or something, and she had a very difficult, thick accent. And she was either right about everything or wrong about everything. I can't remember. The show was very difficult. I mean, I saw it in 1973 or whenever it came out. It's hard to remember. But it was continually a situation of Eddie trying to hook up his father with someone or control his father in some way. Maybe you should do this. But Brandon Cruz was very charming as the Bobby Brady kind of boy. And the interesting thing about him is that he went on to be a fairly well-known hardcore punk rock singer. And I think I heard about this a few years ago. I didn't look into it at that time. I was just shocked because Brandon Cruz, the little boy, if you look at him, if you go look at any pictures of him, he looks like a cookie, a little smiley face cookie. And then you think, this is a holy boy, that he's going to pass through life without any trial or tribulation, without any drama, like Bobby Brady, you know? Even more so. Bobby Brady's a pale imitation of the goodness that is Brandon Cruz. But anyway, so he went on to be the leader of this hardcore band, and so I just wanted to play a little bit of the two musical relations, one being the Harry Nilsson theme song, which is quite short, Best Friends, is what it's called, and then a little bit of the Dr. No, which is the Brandon Cruz hardcore punk outfit. Brandon Cruz also sang for Black Flag for a while. I didn't get any of that. I thought it'd be more interesting to get the Dr. No. So, Harry Nilsson, and then Dr. No, Brandon Cruz running right through it. A cruise runs through it.
People, let me tell you about my best friend. She's a warm-hearted person who loved me till the end. People, let me tell you about my best friend. She's a one-boy cuddly toy, my up, my down, my pride and joy. People, let me tell you about him. He's so much fun, whether we're talking man to man.
So at any rate, that was the courtship of Eddie's father theme song by Harry Nilsson, and it's done sort of from the point of view of Eddie, like, people, let me tell you about my best friend, his best friend being Bill Bixby, the Incredible Hulk. Although he wasn't incredible back then, he was just unincredible. But he was a very good father. He was one of those, you know, if you were a child watching that, I think you'd want him to be your father. Because he sat down and you could talk to him. He was very friendly and kind. At least it seemed that way. I don't know if that's how it would seem now. But he did back then. So then, Eddie, who was so sweet and gentle, went on to do a little bit of this. It's pretty good, though, for punk rock, I think. But strange to put the two together.
Yeah.
Just for legal reasons, we won't continue playing that. If we, I don't know if there are legal reasons, but you get the point. It's just shocking to me. Oh, what's this noise? Hello? Oh, I thought somebody had joined me, but no. So, yes. That's interesting to me, that trend. I don't mind that he became this, this punk rock person. It's just, we get these images, especially of young children, and in some ways we fixate on them, or we control that sensibility, so that Brandon Cruz always is the little smiling chocolate chip cookie face, and he can't become this other thing. But he did. I like it. Anyway, we've gone for 40 minutes, and I'd say a good bit of it was a disaster. That's how it goes. This is a practice, I would say. I would say after we do another, well, I can't give a figure, a lot of these, I'll have a bit of a better grasp. Maybe, I don't know. I spend most of my day in silence, and then all of a sudden I'm talking. That's strange. You know, it's not normal. Or is it? I don't know. Maybe it is normal. Maybe that's what we all do. At least, you know, we talk really. There's a lot of that casual talk we do. Hello, goodbye. How are you? Nice day. What are you eating? What time is it? All that stuff. That doesn't even really count. You're not really saying it. You're participating in a conversation, but it's really just something. You could be handing them a little sheet of paper with that on it, and that's how much you care. It's not that you don't care, but there's not much in it. But then maybe you get home, and you have one real conversation, and maybe it lasts 5 minutes. So I suppose, in a way, that's all I'm doing. So I don't talk during the day, talk at night, sometimes. What can we say? For a final little bit, we're going to play the song of a very well-known, and I say highly regarded, member of the RonFez.net community, Mr. Fez Paul, who I've had the pleasure of attempting to speak to on Skype several times. And never quite worked out. I also tried to speak with Riley Luck this evening, and that didn't work out so well either. Technology. That's a noise. If you can hear that, that's a sound of my house vibrating. Some houses do. Mine does. That does a lot too. So anyway, Mr. Fez Paul with a song of his. It's an original tune. I've listened to it. I like it. I think it's very hooky. I thought it was going to sound a lot like Rush, because, as we know, Mr. Fez Paul likes a band called Rush. This is called Ocean Dance, and this will play us into the silence. Thank you all for joining me. We'll do it again sometime, unspecified, probably next week. And hopefully it'll be smoother. You know, I don't say that it will be. I just hope that it will be. It may be less smooth, and that may be pleasant. I don't know, maybe that's fun. Fez Paul, Ocean Dance. Thanks for your submissions. If you want to submit something to me, please do. sherwinsleeves@yahoo.com. I'd be happy to listen and play whatever you have. Thank you.
On the wind, you catch a dream, and you fall, tumble away, around the bend, your heart careens, and you call don't know what to say. Said that you were on an island, the beast surrounded by the sea. See the ocean to its depths, under the moon, till it's cold, look far away.
Love you.